Kia ora. Welcome, welcome. This is the Bad Monkey, and welcome to my show. This is episode 18, and I'm proud to be part of the Radio 13 Music Collective. Find out all about us, some about us, at radio13.co.nz. As always, we are broadcasting live here today from the Sky Tower in Auckland, 104.6 FM, and streaming live via planetaudio.org.nz. Now, last Sunday, what did I do? The Bad Monkey took a trip back in time to play a song for each country that I had lived or visited. So check that rather fantastic, whimsical, eccentric episode on a podcast by looking for it at planetaudio.org.nz or a link at the Radio 13 Facebook page. Now, today, we are also going to kind of go back in time to remember the music and appreciate the music in TV shows and movies of the 80s. And I have in this studio here with me my fellow Radio 13 DJs, Claire Martin and Sir Simon William Todd. Hello, hello, everybody.
Kia ora.
Hi, Rick. How
are you? So, Simon William Todd, if we are being French, eh?
Oh, we are French today, are we? Okay. Well, we can.
Pourquoi pas?
Oh, c'est Simon Todd.
Eh oui.
Of the Bouton.
Yes.
Shrugging. That just expressed all my feelings.
How are you? We can't hear you shrug, Simon. You kind of make a noise when you shrug.
Bonjour.
You have to wear speckly earrings like me.
Oh, yes. And yes, we are all here. Dawn up in our 80s garb. And unfortunately the headphones have kind of like smoothened down your 80s look.
I did some serious backcombing for
you
today.
Did?
It was really exciting. I've got the good look for radio.
Yes, you do. Yes? Have the good look. Yes. For radio. It's good that we're all family here. And so tell us about your last episode, Simon. This was with Grant Gordon, wasn't it?
It was with Grant Gordon, bass player with And Also the Trees, who are a formative band from the said decade we are celebrating today.
Oh, very good.
Who are massive in Europe. And that's the extent of their massiveness.
It's pretty massive.
It is pretty massive. Mm-hmm. But they are, you know, there's a lot of bands that's very popular in Europe and nowhere else, not even that shitty little island off the coast of France. I had a phone interview with Grant. He's got a new kind of prog rock project.
That's right.
Which is all about the
Troy Wars, or something like that.
Yeah, Siege of Troy.
Yeah.
Very prog subject. And he's got a new song. They're called the new song called Songs of Alexander, which you can find on all streaming platforms. And he's managed to fit prog into 3.5 minutes.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, he's
very
also good. Managed to fit it into 20 minutes on another song.
It's prog on speed.
Yes, prog on speed.
Very good.
That's what's just staying in the poster.
Yeah,
it should do.
Should.
It will be, side of a bus.
Well, for those of you out there, if you want to find out more about Simon's last episode, search for What Simon Says on planetaudio.org.nz. And Claire, your show's coming up.
I've got a show next Saturday night.
Okay.
And in fact, we all seem to be delving into the past, because my last show was a story, my kind of Desert Island Discs.
That's right.
Talking about music that I was really attached to and part of my history. But the next show I'm focusing on keyboard music, which is a huge kind of field, if you like, because I go from the 16th century right the way through to 2012, I think. So it's a lot of music to play with. Some beautiful music.
And you're going to do it live again?
Yes. And Sir Simon Bouton, William Dode, is going to be the button pusher, which is why he's Sir Simon, because I'm very grateful for somebody who helps me with the technical stuff.
Very good.
Might bring my harpsichord along as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes, do that.
Yay. And you're just coming here for that granny's drink. That's what it is.
Yes,
I know.
Feed him Riesling.
Especially when she brings it out of a handbag.
Yeah, it's amazing what can fit into a woman's handbag.
I kid you not, it's bottomless.
Yeah.
All right, so what we're going to do today, the way we're going to play the game today is I'm going to play the track, and you're going to have to kind of try and guess it, whether it's from a TV show or a movie, or from the 80s anyway, and that's how we're going to celebrate it. And yeah, it's going to be loose, it's going to be fun. And this is the first one. And boys and girls out there, play along.
The Whistle.
I'll be so sad if you don't know this one. Come on.
Shit.
Well, it's the music they used on Top of the Pops.
It is fucking Top of the Pops. Now, bonus round. Who composed this?
Paul Hardcastle.
Paul fucking Hardcastle.
Oh my God, oh my I'm going to lose this game today. I'm just putting a disclaimer out there. I did not watch TV. I had no TV. And I'm too posh to go to blockbuster films, so I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it while Simon answers all the questions.
Too pure. That was two choices of who I could have said it was, and that was the first one that came out.
Too posh for blockbusters. Oh my God, that's going to be a quote. Yeah, it's going to write that down.
TV game show blockbusters or the video store from.
Yeah.
But surely you watched Top of the Pops at some point, did you not, Claire?
Radio with Pictures. That was what I watched. That was the one that I made a date with TV every Sunday night.
Radio with Pictures.
It was Karen. Okay. All right. Everybody out there is going to be going with a surname, and I'm going to have to come up with it.
Not Karen.
Karen. Yeah.
I think that's a different kind of industry, but anyway.
I'll come back to you on this.
We'll come back to that. So, Top of the Pops.
Profitable in the 1980s, wasn't it, that industry?
Yo. Yes. Yes, very. And I kind of have some memories, but we will not go there on this episode. But what are some memories of Top of the Pops that you remember, Sir Simon?
In at number 16, it's Bros with Drop the Boy.
Drop the boy, drop the boy. I kind of like this. I do like Bros.
I just remember it being a slightly weird thing for me in the 80s because I wasn't really into pop music in the 80s, so my sister would watch it quite often. But it was always on it. It was Thursday evening, 7 o'clock, I think, or 7:30.
And this was what? This was in the UK?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know how it got anywhere else, or time-wise. But yeah, certainly I think there was a lot of miming.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure.
It was all about miming, yes.
Yeah, and I think in the main...
It was much easier, I think.
But then there was a rule, they passed a rule that said you have to play live. Vocalists have to sing live. But I don't think that came into a bit later.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, but there was definitely a lot of miming and people with one electronic drum and kind of doing weird kind of dancing while they hit a drum, not in time to the music. And teenagers who are probably now in their 50s, 60s, or even dead.
Karen Hay. There you go.
Oh,
Karen
finally.
Hay.
Yeah. All right, Karen Hay.
Who is worth a shout-out, actually. She's been a broadcaster as well for decades in New Zealand, and many people will know that name.
Oh,
and
right.
A writer and bands and supported New Zealand music for decades.
Okay, so that was your Radio
with
Pictures.
That was my Top of the Pops.
Gotcha. Okay, well, cool. So now let's go for an easy one because I know Simon will know this one. So don't say this one, Simon, because we'll see if Claire knows this.
Uh-huh.
She has to. This has been sampled so many fucking times.
Well, actually, I have to say, I know that by ear, but I was given some clues. And is it Knight Rider?
Oh, fine, yes. Yes, you must have liked The Hoff at some point.
Look, no. I was very into alternative culture, but I'm just grateful that I've got friends in the right places today who gave me a little hint on that one.
That's good. But Hasselhoff did kind of made a name for himself.
Oh, I knew
show.
Who he was, yeah. Indeed, but I didn't make an appointment with Telly on that one.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. But I know Simon did because he brought a matchbox version of the Pontiac Firebird into the studio with him today.
Yep.
with his
extended front. Night Rider, or shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man who does not exist.
That's a very interesting Cornish accent.
But yeah, I've got one of my kit cars here. It's one from the Series 4, I think, because it has the sunroof.
Series 4?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. You've got to know your Knight Rider series, because that was when there was an episode called Knight of the Juggernaut, when they found a way to destroy Kit and then remade him with Super Pursuit Mode. And also convertible C button. What does the C button do? Press it and find out, Michael. And it turned it into a convertible car.
Oh, awesome. I'd like one of those cars.
You know, we take it for granted today that we got Siri. And I think, yeah. I don't know what's the name of her alternate on Google phones.
Alexa.
Oh, Alexa, right?
Indeed.
But back then, I mean, I was fascinated just listening to Kit tell Michael, the human, how much more intelligent he was.
Mm. Well, that's like every wife and partner, though, isn't it? I mean, let's face it, we didn't need Siri in those days.
And there, I think you'll find you've hit the nail on the head of the success of the show, Claire. It was basically a kind of buddy movie, and, you know, it dug deep into the heart of every relationship.
It was really deep stuff.
So what's your favourite episode, apart from the Juggernaut?
Well, I always enjoyed the ones with Carr, which was the prototype version of Kit, who was evil. And there were two episodes of that, and there was also one with Michael Knight's evil brother. Called Garth Knight, who was played very unconvincingly by David Hasselhoff as well. And that was back in the days when it was very difficult to, where you couldn't composite an image, so you never saw both of them on screen together.
Yes.
So Garth Knight had a beard and David Hasselhoff did a very just an evil kind of grid, kind of grrr.
It's always more interesting, isn't it, to get the kind of dark side of that character. Like it's like the fascination with Batman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. That's
very
right.
True. Very true. And there was the Jump the Shark episode where they managed to get Kit to drive on water.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
Yeah. You don't go back and look for it either.
I must say, what I did remember was that bombshell of a mechanic that was always in the truck.
Bonnie.
Was it Bonnie?
Yeah, played by Patricia McPherson.
Oh, my God. Have you been doing your homework, Simon?
You're pulling my chain.
Absolutely not.
Okay, yeah.
I should have bought my I should have bought my Knight Rider annulin. That's what I should have bought in.
Jeez. All right.
Another one. Now, off to the movies we go.
I don't know what this is, but I'm enjoying it. It's very epic, and it must be a Western.
I just got
it. It's got a big landscape.
It's good to hear what Claire thinks of when you hear the soundtrack. So, Men on Horses.
I have to gaze to the distance when I hear that music.
And gaze to the distance, Men on Horses.
Heroic position.
Okay. And
get my leather jacket on, tassels.
And how about this?
It's galloping, isn't it? Across the plains.
Galloping across
apparently
the plains.
Apparently not.
Well, you could kind of look at it metaphorically, galloping across the plains. But have a listen a little bit more. If I told you this was John Barry, would that make any difference?
No. This is where Ruben really regrets inviting me into the studio.
Actually, it's quite cool to hear what you think
when... I'm a student.
Yeah, with the music. Go on then, Simon. What is this?
This is the soundtrack to A View to a Kill.
This is A View
James
to a
Bond.
Kill.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I recognise it because it's one of the, I think it's one of Duran Duran's finest songs.
Yes.
Theme tune to this song.
Yes.
This film.
This isn't Duran Duran.
No, but they, I just at the end, I didn't know what it was either, and I was going down, I thought Claire was very confident in her, then I just heard the lyric, the strings were playing the...
The hook. Yes.
A View to a Kill.
Yes.
Ooh, those are very good. John Barry, James Bond horns, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Western, I think. I think that's gives me a big landscape. I'm just going to stay with it.
This is not fucking Bonanza.
No? Okay, fair enough.
Or the Magnificent Seven.
View to a Kill.
Unfortunately, it's not one of the best Bond films because Roger Moore was about 90 when he did it, which is very unconvincing, especially if you watch it now.
Although especially when he was next to Grace Jones.
Yeah.
Because she was in this one.
She was in this one.
Yes.
That's an amazing person, amazing performer.
Absolutely.
Very versatile. City Limits.
Does a butterfly jump.
70 year old.
The sky. The Eiffel Tower.
Right.
That's where it starts.
Yay.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, you saw her. Did you see her?
Her live,
she
is incredible.
Oh, yes.
So much energy.
Okay, so we're going to have more fun with this. We're going to just more have fun with Claire. Really.
She's going to leave, I think.
Okay.
Watch her perplex.
Check out this one.
Face.
See, when I think of Claire and her choir.
Swingle singers. what's the game
You don't
show?
Know this one, Simon.
It's a game show.
It's not.
Oh, my God.
It's a sitcom, is it? It's a sitcom.
It's a sitcom. You're
American,
close.
American sitcom.
British.
No, it's British. Is it... what's that one with the... in the suburbs? It's... Oh, jeez.
It's not in the suburbs. It's in a. It's kind of like in a classroom.
Okay, put me out of my misery.
Mind your language.
Mind your language.
Do you remember with Jeremy Brown, the teacher? And every time I hear that, I it's the opening credits is like sketches of the different students that come in, right? Then you have this sexy French girl, Danielle.
Okay, so you watch British TV growing up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, you see. It's really interesting.
As you keep reminding us.
I know, yeah. I know. But it's kind of interesting what's in your psyche from those years, right? The music always stays in your memory, doesn't it?
It is the music.
Always there.
Yeah. And the music.
I recognize the music.
It does trigger off certain imageries, though, with, Mr. Brown and his pack of students.
If you watch that show now, it's incredibly racist, and it's incredibly stereotypes
sexist,
are horrific,
I'm sure.
Sexist, horrific, and I'm actually an English language teacher.
Yes, you are, and that's why I played this for you.
Yeah. But you know,
really
you can, sometimes you can't get it out of your head when you walk into a classroom. That kind of the stereotypes. But I actually started about 5 years ago. Started writing a sitcom based in an English language school with a friend.
Brilliant,
but. We got halfway through the first episode of a script and realised that we couldn't do it because, we were trying to do it so you didn't actually see students because that would just be not good. But then I realised that every single character I'd written was based very much on a particular person and I'd taken all their awfulness.
Well, that's usually what you have to do, though.
And they would have all hated me.
But I must say, now that was actually quite a funny one. But this should be something you would recognize, and this is another piece that is super famous.
Okay,
so have a listen. There is certainly some galloping in this one.
I can sing along with it, but I can't tell you the name of it.
Oh. So what does it bring
it's
to
horses.
Mind?
Again,
it's horses again.
Big landscapes, yeah. You see, whenever you get reverb and horns, it's going to be a Western, isn't it?
Well, there is some Western in this one. This is John Williams.
John Williams, yeah.
Yeah, you can recognize that
the
kind
epic
of rousing
Star Wars
sort
kind of sound.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, massive.
Whoa. what I think is amazing about John Williams is, even though he has that kind of pop sensibility, where a lot of this, there's a lot of the same sounds, the same kind of phrases that he uses. There's always triplets, there's always big strings and brass, but each of his tunes is also incredibly identifiable. There's Star Wars, there's Superman, there's E.T., there's Jurassic Park, there's this one, which is... Do you want me to tell you? Do you want me to tell you, Claire?
Yes, I do. Go on.
This is the theme from Indiana Jones.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Can't you not see Harrison Ford kind of like in his...
Totally.
...hat and his whip?
Now I can.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I'm seeing him.
I was growing
one
up.
One of my first crushes, really.
Yeah? Yeah. Oh, well, I would join you with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too, I think, actually. Yes. Yeah.
Now, this is, as you said, John Williams. I mean, he does have his share of hooks, doesn't he? Mm.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
This
He's
is brilliant.
One of the greatest film writers, really, for music.
Yeah. It's just so rousing. And I mean, this is when I think. I'm not saying that there is no art in writing scores for movies these days, but it doesn't seem to resonate or stay in the mind as much as...
Well, it's all about the adventure of going to the cinema, which was just about escapism.
Right.
So it was just creating that landscape. But now you're getting much more alternative sort of sounds coming into movies, aren't you? Well, you have been for a while.
Yeah. And again, it also is the sequels as well. So I think it carries...
The recognisable branding of music.
Do you want a cool fact? I've got a French horn.
You have a French horn?
I do have a French horn.
Ooh, and a bit of reverb and a horse and you'll be set.
And the French... But the previous owner of my French horn was a professional musician with the London Symphony Orchestra.
Okay.
He played on the original recording of the Superman soundtrack from 1978, written by John Williams. And so, and the French horn that I have now was used on that very recording.
That's very cool.
Wow. That is brilliant. Yeah. How did you manage to score a French horn?
Well, it was my second instrument when I was growing up.
Here's Simon Button, William Todd, after all.
So the pianoforte, the pianoforte was number one, of course. Ah, but Mummy wanted me to play a second instrument. So I chose a French horn for some reason.
Cool.
I wasn't very good at it. I failed the only exam I did because I was so nervous my knee wouldn't stop shaking, and of course that reverberated up my body into my lips and I couldn't actually blow through it.
So you learned to blow quite well.
Yeah.
Your embouchure.
Yeah.
Yeah, not lips, it's embouchure.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. You are good for something.
I can add in the randoms.
Oh, goodness. All right, here's a sad one. What does this show in your mind, Claire?
A drama starring Barbara Streisand, or, you know, like... it's romantic, it's sad. It might be even Russian.
Actually, Barbara Streisand might actually do well in this TV show.
And it's about to have a blonde woman looking into the distance, singing a sad part of the song.
And her skin is green.
Her skin is green. It's very sad. She must be very unwell.
The thing about this is, this music happened at the end of this show, and it belies the kind of, it's very, you know, it's a superhero show, but the fact is that there's a very sad thing going on with the man, Dr. David Banner, because he can't, he's a loner, he can't stay in the same place because his alter ego
beginning to tear up.
Yes. Just ruins his whole life. So at the end you all see him walking down a road by himself with this music, and he has to move on. He can't settle down.
He can't stay with the green woman.
It's a much better piece of music than it should be for what actually was a pretty trashy TV show.
It is quite a pretty piece of music.
It became really cult because even though it was sort of corny in a lot of places, right? And I will always remember the line, "Please, Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry." I love that line. This is the Incredible Hulk, by the way, if you're still guessing.
For God's sake.
So Bill Bixby actually played this role as Dr. Bruce Banner.
Ah.
And what Simon says is absolutely correct. I mean, this is a piano piece by Kenneth Johnson. I'm sorry. This is a piece by Joe Harnett, who actually works with the creator of the TV show, Kenneth Johnson. And it's absolutely fucking sad.
Mm.
Right? But it does show the loneliness of a man, because this piece is called The Lonely Man. And at the end, he's always by himself because he can't be with anyone.
Yeah, you wouldn't have this composition unless you had Chopin. This is basically stripped down Chopin
without
the delayed resolutions. Yeah. We'll recommend an off movie. We've got to try and put something in here, right?
And you have. Brilliant, brilliant piece. And Bill Bixby has now left us. But The Incredible Hulk,
Lou Ferrigno, was it?
There you go. Mm. Yeah. He's still around.
Man struggling with himself. Yeah. It's a good theme, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Absolutely.
Eternal theme.
Absolutely.
Me in the bathroom most mornings.
Now, I am going to try and play you another track, which won quite a few Oscars, if I remember correctly. And here we go. It's familiar though, right, Claire?
Yes.
From The Mission.
Yes, I was going to tell you that. Ennio Morricone.
Ennio Morricone, yes.
Yeah, I've sung this a bit, actually.
Because it's a very famous piece, yeah?
Yes.
That's absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
It's an oboe.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, it's an oboe.
It's a superbly written score. I mean, he was the more artistic vision, I guess you could say, of the soundtrack composers. Amazing. It's a lot of westerns he wrote.
Oh yeah, he started out with the spaghetti westerns.
Yeah.
And this is truly one of the most beautiful Morricone pieces.
Yes, I think it's the best thing about the film in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely.
The cinematography as well.
And the film is another. It's heart wrenching. Mm. Absolutely heart wrenching. I mean, it's a very nice storyline. I mean, you've got Jeremy Irons and you've got De Niro, right?
Yeah.
And they're playing opposite each other, and obviously. De Niro, he finds his spirituality and he goes to the forest with the Indians in South America. But yeah, now this music just really adds on that level of...
Takes it to the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you watched this one, Simon?
I don't think I have.
The Mission?
No.
If you haven't, go watch.
Mm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful movie released in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Roland Joffé. So he's not that well known, but he definitely produced an absolutely beautiful piece. Beautiful piece. And this is actually a team. This the one I played was actually called Gabriel's Oboe. Yeah, which featured in the movie. And Morricone actually described his music here as a duet between the Spanish and Guarani themes, because this was the Guarani Indians,
right.
And it features a lot of the indigenous kind of instruments.
But it uses a little bit of the church music sound.
Yes,
the soundtrack.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Okay, so let's carry on, shall we? And let's see what I can cook up. Let's see. This is the next one. Here we go. Your favourite characters in Sesame Street?
Well, it was because I said it again. A little bit OCD here, but I didn't have TV growing up. But I was allowed to go and watch Sesame Street. So it was really neat. Big Bird and Oscar and who's the chappy playing the drums? That's what my son's doing
Muppets,
now.
He's from the Muppets.
Yeah. Animal.
Yeah. Ernie and Bird, I thought, were a bit lame.
I liked the music.
It was the music on Sesame Street that I really liked. And, you know, Patti LaBonne was singing on ABC on Sesame Street. They had some of the best singers and performers just guest on the thing. And it used to be, wow, I can go and watch Sesame Street. It was a real big treat.
Because I remember in the 70s you had a similar show called The Electric Company.
Oh, yes.
Which you had Bill Crosby, and you actually also had Morgan Freeman reading some bits as well. And I think Irene Carlo was there, I think. But yeah, it was much more 70s, and you also had 70s celebrities coming to sing and doing. But it was much more sketch comedy, right? And then they evolved into this with Jim Henson and his puppets, which was quite cool. And I do agree. There are some that I love. The Two-Headed Monster, if you remember that one.
No.
Yes, and they had this mana mana. Oh, is it? No, different.
You mean that tune?
That tune.
Which is with you for life, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think they were in that tune.
That's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Exactly.
And then then they had introduced quite a new characters. Elmo, for example, that's like the new modern version of Sesame Street, which I absolutely hate. I can't stand Elmo. Yeah, it just drives me up the wall. I think it's just his whinging. This gets to me.
It created a whole industry with the Creatures Workshop, was it?
With Jim Henson.
And
all
the films that resulted from Sesame Street. So it was like 40 years of popular culture.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. I'm trying to think that Kermit actually start out in Sesame Street before he made it big.
Yeah?
I think so, right?
I think he was a Muppets person.
Not, was he?
Yeah, Sesame Street. I just remember it being very, almost exotic, because the children's TV in the UK was so twee and so middle class. And then you got this American thing with the brownstone building and the trash can.
Yeah.
And the kids sitting on the stairs and then and Big Bird. And I just thought it seemed so far away, but so much cooler than suburban kind of twee London.
What, Blue Peter and all that?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, much, yeah. But I love the Count. I quite like the Count.
Count von Count.
I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
See, it's the music again, isn't it?
11, 12. It never went up beyond 12.
And didn't Feist, she appeared in the late version of...
Really, did she?
Doing ABC, the song ABC as well.
Oh, okay. So. I kind of lost touch in the 90s with Sesame Street, but yeah, ABC.
I'd imagine so. Other things you were doing.
I think a lot of people...
I still learn how to count. I still need to learn how to count. All right, let's go for something a little bit scary since Halloween's coming up.
Ooh.
All right, here we go. This is The Shining.
Wow.
Stanley Kubrick.
Can't recall hearing this one.
Is it the beginning where the cars, with the big aerial shots and the cars going up to the hotel?
Yes, going up to the hotel. Well, that's right, yeah.
I've never been good at watching scary films, so I'm missing a bit of that culture too.
Well, if you're not into scary films, don't fucking watch this one, because it fucks with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one that...
I've only seen excerpts. Boy on the tricycle thing riding around the hallway.
Yes, and the twins and
the blood in the elevator. Have you guys seen Ready Player One?
I have, actually.
It's a great bit where they go into part of the game in that, as they go back into the Shining Hotel.
Yes.
Fantastic. It's not in the book, that bit. And I actually think I read the book after I'd seen the film, and I think the book's probably better. But they couldn't get, there were different, there's so many cultural references from the 80s in the book, and they couldn't get all of them licensed for the film, so they changed bits around.
This is quite, it's not at all cliche horror movie writing, is it? This is really quite just disturbing.
When you hear all these noises, right? It just fucks with you.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, it reminds you of a screaming person. Yeah. I mean, that's more the vampire on the Dracula on the organ rising out of the floor thing, isn't it? But this, it's just, yeah, it's supposed to be just odd.
Off kilter. Yeah. And this, this piece was composed by Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkind. Original soundtrack. Director Stanley Kubrick, as I said, 1980, The Shining. So, boys and girls, hey, back then, you watch films like this, yeah, they fuck with you for the rest of your life, man. No, okay, that's it. I'm too scared now. All right, I'm going to play something a little bit
from
more.
From Sesame Street to that, you're really messing with us.
I am, and I... Evangelis.
Huh. Just gonna take my shirt off.
I'm jealous.
You could tell with the sax like that, something's coming off.
Yeah. Yeah, the saxophone is so sexy.
Is this Blade Runner?
It is fucking Blade Runner. This guy's on the ball today, isn't he? Impress us by telling us which scene.
I just think about that.
I think it's when he's at home and he's undressing. It's got to be. Is that Harrison Ford again?
You just have Harrison Ford on your mind, that's
what
it is.
Yeah, I know. Let's see how my evening's going to be panning out tonight.
Yeah, but I think this is the make-out scene between Deckard and Robot Girl.
Ah.
Harrison Ford and Sean Young. Oh, right. Sean Young, Sean Young.
Right.
Yeah, but this is Vangelis. So, what do you know of Vangelis?
Vangelis?
Vangelis, yeah. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I mean, electronic composers. Yeah, they did a lot of the sort of real big films of the 80s, eh? The, what's that? Lumen song, movie about the runners.
Chariot of Fire.
Chariot of Fire, yes.
Yeah.
That's the song you can't get out of your head.
He was quite pivotal, I think, in, was it electronic music because of the synthesizers and stuff? Simon, do you agree?
They definitely had a big influence, didn't they, their synthesizers, him coming through.
To the point that it became a little cliche.
Yeah.
Like I think he opened the door, though. Then everyone started doing it, and then it became a cliche because it's like, ooh, you can use the synth for this and synth for that, right?
I mean, it was a wonderful new toy, wasn't it?
It was.
And overused. Maybe that gave rise to a little bit more of a punk revival, just trying to, you know, just fuck with all that and let's get back to basics and just good kind of rock and roll and acoustic sounds. It's too much production going on.
And it's taken the saxophone probably... Well, 40 years to actually kind of get its kudos back in rock.
Recover
rock
from Kenny G, that's why.
Oh, don't mention that.
Fuck me, Kenny G. He needs to go Kenny F.
I had a six-month relationship with someone that forced us to listen to Kenny G during the bedroom sessions.
Oh, that would put you off.
You know, this is fucking live radio, right? You know, who else is listening to this show?
She won't be listening. She's dead.
Kenny G is enough reason to finish with anybody, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So this, boys and girls, is the love theme from Blade Runner. Original film, release 1982.
And it took decades for the real, full version of that film to be released.
The director's cut by Ridley Scott. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the one you should watch.
Indeed,
And there wasn't just one director's cut, was there? There was the final cut.
Yeah,
there was the director's cut, then there was the final cut.
Yeah.
It was just the one that you should watch with no voiceover. And
it took me 10 years before I could introduce my partner to watch this film with me, and now she's like a massive fan.
But it just creates, I think, more atmosphere in that film than did any of those sort of space fiction.
Did you enjoy the together. 2020 Blade Runner? Is it 2049?
Yes, yeah, 2049 with Mr. Gosling.
Mm. Yeah, but it's not the same as the original uncut, final cut version.
Yes. I'm interested to see if there is another final cut for the 2049 version, because there are some very beautiful bits in the latest sequel, right? Mm. The music was actually quite electronic as well, but it wasn't as evocative as what you hear here.
And I don't know if it was just because that was one of the first films that really went to a lot of trouble to create an alternative world, but... I don't know, there's not that many films have done so well. We've seen it all now, haven't we?
Yeah.
But the first time we saw Blade Runner, it was really knocked you out.
But alternative in the fact that it's got links to the, you know, it's not so alternative, it's fantastical. You can see the clear line between whatever now is and...
Yeah, it relates to where we're at.
Yeah, it does relate to where we're at, yeah.
When you're driving in Auckland traffic, you really wish you had one of those cars that would rise above it all.
But Deckard was so different from Han Solo, if you're into your Star Wars, right? Mm. Which I would say is
flawed hero. Well, so is Han Solo, actually.
Yes. Mm. But I think Ridley Scott took it to the next level with Harrison Ford, and that just makes him such a well-loved character in the 80s in the movies, wasn't he? Mm. He's very versatile, but at the same time, he still retains a lot of his charm, the Harrison Ford charm, which you see in all the characters that he played.
He was probably one of the last actors who kind of performed that role of the star in the star system from the 1930s. You know, the star was assigned to a studio and would make particular types of films.
Yeah.
And he was one of the last people that did that. Mm. And sometimes he broke out, but then he could never really completely escape.
Mm. I think he should be sponsoring the show. He's getting a lot of man crush time here. Mm.
Absolutely. So. You hear that, Harrison?
Yeah.
Fucking give me a call, man.
Me.
Please give me one first.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to the police academy. And they were each assigned very hazardous duties.
Indeed, which involved tight clothes.
But I took them away from all that, and now they work for me.
What a brave man you
are. My name is Charlie.
Gotta love that kind of 70s, 60s. It's 60s. It's more 60s, isn't it? That's so brassy.
But it's got the disco hi-hat in it, though, doesn't it?
You know, I mean, the whole 70s, 80s thing, that women were finally in action films.
Yeah.
You know, they were smoking cigarettes, wearing pants, and they were being heroes in their own story. And that is got to be a positive thing. And actually, after that decade, or in the 90s and so on, it became a lot more conservative. You don't see that kind of thing in women in popular culture as much. But there was a real kind of burst of it in television.
In the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, 70s, 80s.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they were so liberal. I don't think even bras were worn in some of the films back at that time.
I didn't notice, well, Ruben.
I didn't as well. All I noticed was I wanted my hair like Farrah Fawcett.
Oh. Mm.
I spent my whole life trying to get my hair to
look
like that.
You're still spending your whole life trying to get
I'm sure we could whiz something up for you, you know?
Thank you. Oh, man, the number of pin-ups I had on my wall. Farrah Fawcett. Oh, yes. It was her and Bo Derek, by the way.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Gotta be. I mean, I was a teenager.
Although
maybe
that whole image of the woman, as she gave rise to the whole crisis, which I think women are facing, which is to be, they have to be everything now. They have to have an incredible career, be incredible looking, be able to leap into a moving vehicle at speed. Thank you, Farrah Fawcett. It's like, God's sake, you know.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you. Who's the other one? Linda Carter?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they started it off. But I must say, though, okay, we're changing gears a little bit, but I just wanted to say this horror film that I watched, Midsommar, if that's how you pronounce it, it's this really, really fucking scary film that will fuck you with your head. But the main character in that movie wasn't the typical blue-eyed, sexy sort of cheerleader type. You know, she was just a person, a common, typical next door kind of girl. And I thought that was really good to cast that role and to show that, hey, yeah, anybody can put the fear of God in you. Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, totally. All right, now, we still have a bit of time, so maybe I will ask if this song will remind you of a very key movie in the 1980s. See, I was looking back at my photographs of Simon, and I just realized that he did look like one of the characters in The Breakfast Club. Don't you think? He dresses like it. Are you, first of all, have you actually watched The Breakfast Club? No.
Not me neither.
Shit.
I didn't know that that was a key track from the film as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a massive. It's a massive. Yeah. I can't. Well, I'm going to spoil it for you now, but at the end, this is the track that comes on because it sort of signifies, you know,
triumph. Yeah,
yeah, triumph. Yeah. But fuck, man, you're going to watch this film.
Well,
Breakfast
see,
Club.
I didn't, I don't think these, I think I was too young, maybe too young, but I didn't really realise any of these films. This one, Pretty in Pink, Heathers, which I think 1990s Heathers, one, wasn't it? But Stand By Me, all these films I didn't know about till I met New Zealanders when I was in my 20s. And I think a lot of these kind of Brat Pack films have been much more influential here. Kind of because American culture was kind of imposed here a bit more than it was in the UK.
Yeah.
Because it had its own thing going on.
It was definitely more American, but it's actually one of those films where it was quite far sighted. Because the premise is really you have four or a few delinquents in the library, I think, or something like that, where they're all just kind of different characters. But they each character represented a different part of the American psyche. So you got the American jock, then you got the quiet girl who's the emo, and then you got the rock and roller, right, the rebel. Then you've got all this, and then you've got the pretty girl, I think it was Molly Ringwald, or whatever her name is. But anyway, so they all kind of explore and talk to each other, and there's conflicts, and then they sort of realize, hey, you sort of get better and you know and you appreciate the differences and diversity. Yeah. So it's got a pretty strong meaning, but fuck, it's a good film.
So Sir Simon is the rock star?
No, he's the custodian. He's the one who empties the trash.
Well, I was thinking I was the jock.
No, of course not. Sir Simon, he is, of course, the rock star.
The rock star.
With the leather jacket, yes. All right, I'm going to play for you now some Pat Benatar.
Our two worlds met in strange surprise. I hid my love in thin disguise. I tried to
do you remember Pat Benatar?
You know, I was just thinking, was I dead in the 80s? but I think that I was listening to alternative music and I kind of, I mean, eventually New Order and, you know, and I was going clubbing and
just dead on a mattress.
Yeah, I think so. trying to find myself and Pat Benatar wasn't there.
No, no. I wouldn't blame you though, because this soundtrack was only popular much later.
Okay.
This was a soundtrack by Giorgio Moroder. Mm-hmm. So what he did is he took that 1927 film Metropolis by Fritz Lang.
Yes.
Fritz Lang. And put a contemporary soundtrack to it, which included this track by Pet Benatar. It's absolutely divine. And yeah, it's one of those rare movies which I think you can still watch it in full on YouTube.
Mm.
And it's a silent film. But man, it's so well done. And it's in the 1920s, right? But yes. It just shows what we have become as a society. Mm. Have you watched it, Metropolis?
I've watched bits of it. But I might watch the new version.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting because you have Freddie Mercury in it singing.
Right.
And you have Adamant, Bonnie Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And these are songs that are still quite obscure. So
it's Love Kills, the Freddie Mercury song.
That's the one, which actually completely flopped at the time when that version of the film was released.
Awful. Yeah.
Not your style, Mr. Knight Rider?
Nah, not my. It's the kind of song that Michael Knight would have played to his lady friend.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is the kind of movies that Simon would be into.
Does it involve a black van? I'm just intrigued about the second toy that Simon's brought in.
Oh, actually, my next track might involve that black van.
Oh, yeah.
What's this one, Simon?
Is it Airwolf?
It's a good guess, but it's not.
ZZ Top?
Blue Thunder?
No. It's got no helicopters in this
Street
one.
Hawk?
No. Sonny Burnett and Ricardo Tubbs.
Is it Miami Vice?
Miami Vice, yeah. It was a huge hit in New Zealand. Apart from with me, obviously. But the New Zealanders would know that one. There are a few people out there listening to this going, oh, for God's sake.
Who are these crackpots who don't know their shit?
Exactly.
But that's what Jan, is that how you pronounce it?
Jan Hammer.
Who took that typical synth sound to that soundtrack of Miami Vice. I fucking love Miami Vice. I still watch season reruns of Miami Vice. Come on.
Yeah.
What's Don Johnson? Yeah. Don Johnson. Okay. Come on.
Again, it was, for me, it was not on I was too young, because even the A-Team used to be on, when it was first on in the UK, it was on at 9:30 at night, which was too late for me. And then it moved into a, here we go.
It's more adult stuff, wasn't it?
It moved into the 5:30 slot.
That's the black van.
And Mike Post, I think you'll find, is the composer of this.
Mike Post
track.
It is.
Yeah, yes. Created by Stephen J. Cannell.
Did you guys get together and just put together a soundtrack and agree on?
Well, I happened to write a dissertation about this program when I was at university, and about the kind of, because it involved a lot of guns, which is why it was on so late at night, but no one actually got shot.
They just killed their guns.
When a car crashed, you always saw the people get out of, plausibly get out of a car, of the cars. And there's theory that backs the fact, because they were Vietnam War veterans.
Yes.
And
what's the leader's name?
John Hannibal Smith.
Look at this guy.
By George Peppard.
Right.
George Peppard.
Unfortunately, you know, he was in Breakfast at Tiffany's, and the kind of thing he got most remembered for was to kind of blame the leader of this band of renegades. But the psychology goes that if people are war veterans, then people forgive them for further crimes. And so people saw the fact that they had guns and shot baddies as okay and acceptable.
Right, yep. It's okay to kill people in those circumstances.
Yeah, although they never did kill people.
You don't show that. You just show your weapon. And,
yeah, why don't you just fire it into the ground?
Yeah.
And what was the characters in that film?
The other characters are Templeton Peck.
Yes.
Played by Dirk Benedict.
Face. Face man.
H.M. Howling Mad Murdoch, played by Dwight Schultz. And Mr. T.
He's reading the credits. Has he got his phone out?
B.A. Bosco Baracus. Bosco Baracus. Bad Attitude Baracus. They're also joined sometimes by Amy Amanda Allen, an ace reporter. And in the last series, by someone called Frankie Santana. But by that time, it's really gone off. It's got quite boring by then.
Hmm. Did you watch the remake?
Yeah.
With, was it Liam Neeson, right? That was actually pretty good.
I thought it was all right.
Yeah. That was pretty good. Well, I'm glad I actually played songs. I didn't know this guy was going to bring his Matchbox collection.
Oh, that's all right. I don't mind talking about the A-Team.
Well, we have, I think, time to...
Furnished by GMC, by the way, this van.
Sorry?
GMC were the company that furnished the van.
Oh.
It said on the end credits, van furnished by GMC.
My God, the amount of detail on your hard drive.
I'll tell you.
It's amazing.
Okay, I thought I wanted to play this one before we end. We have to, because this movie is getting a remake. This is from Dune.
Ah.
1984.
Arthur C. Clarke, the book.
No. I think it was...
Isaac Asimov.
No. Frank Herbert.
Frank Herbert, yes.
Yes.
Sting.
Sting.
Big worm.
Then you ride it. Witches. That's brilliant. I mean, this was directed by David Lynch.
Mm, right? Right.
Yeah. Well, I love this film.
Was it not seen as rather a bit of a folly, a kind of one of those style over substance?
Though, was it?
No,
it was a bit of a failure.
It was, but it became such a cult favorite.
Yeah,
and you actually had the first few computer games based on this because right. I mean, obviously not on the film because the novel is much richer than what's depicted by the film. And I think there's been multiple attempts to depict this on in the cinema and failed because it's like Lord of the Rings, right?
Deep, yeah.
But this version I thought was
sure,
quite...
Sure, Weta Studios could do something with it.
Well, they're remaking it with, what's his name now? The French-Canadian director whose name escapes me. But I hope they do a good job. I had a look at the lineup or the cast, and not too bad. There's a couple of big names in there. Mm. And I think it's 2021 or something is released. But there you go. So that is a list of...
Denis Villeneuve.
There you go. Who that's the dude.
Denis Blade Runner. Villeneuve.
Yeah, really? The guy who did Blade Runner.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yes.
That sounds like it's in good hands.
It is. It is. I'll always remember some really cool names in there. You had the Bene Gesserit, which were the sisterhood of witches in it. And you also had the Kwisatz Haderach, which is this almighty being who is born and he leads the Fremen to freedom. It's brilliant.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
I actually much prefer
like
this one to
Lion,
Star
Witch
Wars.
In the wardrobe, really, isn't it?
It does sound like it. Such cool names.
That giant worm is Jesus.
Right. In, of course.
It's not a big lion. It's a giant worm.
Hey, life is a giant worm, my friend.
Yeah.
And we all need a bit of spice, melange.
Ronan Keating write a song on that? Life is a giant worm, you just gotta ride it. that was Roller Coaster. So confusing these days.
All right, tell me, what's you looking forward to? What's your week looking like next coming up? So you got your show, Classical
Tammy
Chromatics.
Tammy Nielsen, I'm going to see tonight.
Tammy Nielsen tonight.
And next Saturday, Classical Chromatics. Yeah.
Classical Chromatics.
8:30 p.m. Saturday.
8:30 p.m. And Sir Simon is coming to push buttons, yes?
I'm coming to push buttons.
And what have you got on the horizon?
Well, it's Halloween soon, is it not?
It is Halloween.
I shall be dressing up as a kind of sophisticated vampire.
Oh,
yeah,
very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I do believe we are not. Are we not doing a Halloween show?
We are doing a Halloween show, boys and girls. So next Sunday, it's going to be a special one because all of us are coming dressed up in Halloween garb, drinking blood, sucking blood, and. Yeah. Maybe blowing some French horns, who knows?
Roger Bowie's desperately trying to find a Cooler Shaker B-side that's got some reference to kind of the undead in it.
He's really up into his cooler, isn't he?
Unbelievable.
So yeah, join us next week as we take on Halloween and, yeah, scare you with our tales.
1980s earrings, because I wore a 1980s outfit just for those people.
Come on, shake them, shake them, shake them to Robbie. Here we go. Shake them.